session number 10415, Reel 1.
Chambers, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Chambers?
I was born in Newcastle in 1911.
And could you tell me a little about your background?
Well, there wasn't very much to tell, really. I was educated at the Royal Grammar School, Newcastle. I left there in 1928, end of 28, and then I joined Lloyd's Bank in 1929, the beginning of 1929. And I worked in the Newcastle area until the until war started.
How did you come? You joined the 8th Battalion DLI as a second lieutenant. Could you tell me a little bit about why you decided to do that?
The main reason was I knew one or two friends of mine who were already in the battalion. And that is the main reason why I joined.
Do you remember any particular incidents or events or characters from before the war, during your training period?
One great event, of course, I can remember, is when we were, after we were mobilised, we were in various drill halls throughout County Durham. And in, I think it was October 1939, we were sent as a battalion down to Oxfordshire. And the military authorities, in their wisdom, decided that we would embark by train at midnight on a Saturday night. Well, as you can well imagine, a Saturday night with the battalions, who were mainly pitmen, who had never been, most of them had never been out of County Durham in their lives, and to go to Oxfordshire was like going to the other end of the world. And of course, as is well known, in the Durham Light Infantry was very much of a family regiment, and uncles, grandfathers, fathers, and all relations decided to see the lads off on embarkation from Durham Station. As it was about midnight, you well imagine the state of the people who spent the whole of the evening in the pubs celebrating. And it was absolute chaos to get everybody on the train. By the grace of God, we did manage to do it. And so far as I'm aware, everybody eventually arrived down in Oxfordshire. In the early hours of the Sunday morning, we went to a little village called Chwalbury, and where we were until January 40.
Were there any particular officers you remember from these early times for the regiment? Any characters or NCOs?
A great character was a man called Walter Goodenough, who was a company commander of D Company, Hurtonley Spring, who was well known in the area. The CO was Colonel Leybourn, who commanded the battalion as a territorial officer.
What was he
at the beginning of the war? He was a very pleasant character, and a man who was very interested in the regiment and very proud of the regiment and the fact that he was commanding. And his son was an officer in the second lieutenant in the battalion.
You were in charge of the signal platoon at that time?
I was in charge of the signal platoon,
what
yes.
What was your role? What did you have to do as the officer in command of them?
We were issued with various types of equipment, mainly equipment from the 1418 war. We were issued with field telephones called Don Fives, which had been used in the 1418 war, which were the main link between the companies and the battalion headquarters. We had to lay cable whenever we were out on an exercise between the various companies, so that there was communication of a sort. We also indulged in learning the Morse code and also signalling by flag and by heliograph, which had been the system used in the hills of India.
Was this the equipment you were to go to France with?
Yes, we went to France with this equipment.
How did you get on with the locals in the Oxfordshire area?
In the main, we got on very well. I don't think there were any unpleasant incidents at all.
Now, you went to France in...
January 1940. We went across to Southampton, or Portsmouth, to Cherbourg. From there, we drove up to, in transport, up to little village called Saint-Rémy-du-Plain, which was a tiny village with nothing there at all. We had to, eventually, after having been there a few weeks, we had the arrangements were made for us to go for baths, and we went to French barracks in Le Mans, where we were not about 20 or 30 miles away. It was only a question of baths, that were the nearest baths that were available. There weren't many baths in the cottages. We were billeted in various houses in the area. And I always remember being billeted in one cottage, and it was extremely damp. And the lady who owned the cottage used to put in hot bricks from the oven to warm the bed, which used to steam from the dampness from the sheets. Fortunately, nobody went down with pneumonia through this thing, so we must have been fairly tough, I think, at that time.
You were still training at this time, then?
Yes, we were training in a way. We were supposed to be a mobile battalion. We had exercises, embussing and debussing, which used to be carried out as we were given transport, and when these things used to come, and we rehearsed getting in and out of these vehicles and all our equipment. I may say, when the balloon went up, we didn't get embussed anywhere. We marched most of the time. So our training, and the rest of the training was rather vague, really. This time I can't remember very much about it.
So what was the next move, then?
The next move was, we moved up to a little village called Gondecourt, which wasn't very far from Lille. Which was a much bigger than this, the Saint-Rémy-du-Plain, and the billets themselves were much more comfortable and better than the standard we had been having. And we were then engaged in digging anti-tank ditches along the Belgian border, which we did for a month or two. There were various competitions between the companies as to the length in which the ditch could be dug, and in the times.
But your signal platoon wouldn't be active?
No, we weren't active in that. No, we were concentrating on our laying of cables. And
had you had any more modern equipment arrive yet, or were you still...
I can't really remember. At one stage, we did get some wireless sets, which were called number 18 sets, which were carried on their back, which had a short range. They didn't have a very long range, but I can't remember exactly when we had these.
What do you in May the campaign proper started? Give me your impressions of the campaign as you saw it. I believe you were on leave.
I went on leave in May, yes, and was home for about 2 days and was called back when the balloon went up, and eventually I arrived back at the battalion, who were just in the process then of going up into Belgium. And we did then moved up into Belgium, where we met some units retreating rather rapidly from Belgium back into France again. And we were there for a very short time, and then we did the same thing. We withdrew back into France and went down eventually. We had one hurried march backwards to the Arras area.
Was that a very tiring march, the march to the Arras area?
Yes, it was quite tiring. I don't know, about 20, 30 miles, I suppose, we did in a day. And we had no transport by this time. Everything was chaotic, of course, because of the main and because of the refugees who were fleeing backwards down into central France.
How did you deal with that problem?
Well, we just had to put up with it the best way we could, try and get through ourselves, and it was very a pitiful sight. It was to see all these people who were absolutely scared to death of the Germans. Obviously, they remembered the 1418 war. The memory was still there, and the hatred of the Germans too was still there.
Were you under air attack at all?
Yes, we were bombed quite frequently by Stukas at this time. Well, most of the time we were.
What did you think of the Stukas and the dive bombing? Was it effective?
It was pretty effective, and of course it caused chaos in the transport and the refugees, which made the problem even worse. But it was very much of it was a very frightening experience, being dive bombed by these screaming machines.
Do you think the noise, sirens, the scream, do you think that made it worse, or was that...
Oh, that was a great factor. It made it sound much worse than it was.
You moved back into the Arras, Vimy area.
Yes.
At that point. What do you remember about the counterattack and then the subsequent retreat? As it affected you, really?
Yes. Well, we were associated with tanks at that time, and there were these tanks with tiny little two-pounder guns, which even in those days were pretty ineffective and were no use against the German tanks that we saw. I can't really recall much about that.
Do you remember the prisoners?
I remember seeing some prisoners, yes.
Do you know what happened to them? There's some controversy about that.
I can't remember anything about that at all, and I don't think there was... I think it's pure sensationalism. Someone picked this up from somewhere or another, but I don't think it... I know there were supposed to be... prisoners shot, and all, but I didn't see anything of this at all. And as far as I know, there was nothing. There were no rumours at that particular time of anything like that happening.
You'd be with the headquarters company?
Yes, battalion headquarters.
And that would be... You had a new colonel at that time, I think. Did you? Is that Beard, by
then? Colonel Beard came, yes. I'm not sure as to when he did.
Were you...
Yes.
Part of the group isolated at Walrus. Do you remember anything about that?
Yes.
What was the situation there?
And situation, frankly, was nobody knew anything about what was going on at all and didn't know what was happening. There were rumours beginning that we were being embarked from Dunkirk, but we were a fair distance away at that particular time. And trying to get information was very difficult. Nobody seemed to know what was happening, except that the Germans seemed to be advancing fairly quickly and were cutting across towards the Channel ports.
And your signal, as signal officer, you weren't getting any decent intelligence from other units then? Signal?
No. No, we were in communication from the battalion headquarters with brigade, but in this was by the Royal Corps of Signals unit, which had a wireless set then, that time, which went back to brigade, which had nothing to do with the battalion signals. We were purely internal communicants.
Any stories about the fall back to Dunkirk that would illustrate what it was like? Did the fatigue get worse?
Well, one didn't get very much sleep. It got less and less, as one was never knew when you were going to move, whether you were moving during the night or during the day, and mostly you moved as and when the orders came down. But I think the only thing I remember very clearly was we had a wonderful Catholic priest called Father Duggan, who was a tremendous character. He'd been a prisoner in the 1418 war, and although he was very much a Southern Irishman, he'd come back to join up again for this war as soon as this war started, and he came to us when we were in Chorbury. As a signal officer, I was detailed to go to brigade headquarters to find see the position and to get our orders as to what was to happen next. As I was about to go, the padre came up to me and said, "If you're going to brigade, for God's sake, get me an ambulance, because I have got a lot of wounded here." And they were in the cellar and underneath the chateau we were stationed in for that at that particular time. He said, "There are some of my own faith and some of all faiths. But," he said, "if you can't get an ambulance, I will stay with them." Although he was prepared to stay and look after the wounded, although he had been a prisoner in the 1418 war, and he was prepared to do it again. He was a wonderful character.
Any other stories about him you can remember from any time to illustrate what type
he
of
was an ex? He knew more about explosives than many people in the battalion, and he was an expert on killing chickens and plucking them, which were part of our diet at the time. And he was a man of many, many parts, and was liked by everybody. He was a great man. He used to keep the CO happy, who Colonel Beard had been in India most of his service, a regular officer in the Durham Light Infantry, spent most of his service in India, and he didn't like the cold at all, but he liked his game of cards, and the padre used to play cards with him every night to keep him happy.
Anything else from the retreat to Dunkirk?
One thing I can remember, when we got near to Dunkirk and we were on the beaches, or before we got there, Sergeant Joe Mahone, who was a sergeant in A Company, had found a machine gun, a Lewis machine gun, which he was carrying. Well, at this time we were told to abandon all our equipment, but he's refused to do this. He said he wasn't going to leave that for the Germans, and he was carrying this enormous great Lewis gun on his shoulder, which he did, and he carried it on him onto the Mole and onto the ship and brought it back to England with him.
What was the evacuation like from the Mole? Did you evacuate in good order?
Well, it was, I suppose it was a comparatively good order, yes. We had a number of French who were on one side and we were on the other side of the Mole. And although there were no, at first when we got onto this mill, there were no ships in sight at all. And then suddenly a destroyer came up, and we were told to get on. We were very happy to hear that English voices who were saying, "English this way, jump, and get on," which we did very happily. And by which time we were almost out on our feet, and we sat down and promptly fell asleep. There was a bump going out of the harbour. What it was, we never found out, but we didn't really worry. We still continued sailing. And the next thing one remembered was that we were in Dover.
Did you feel as if you'd been defeated, or did you have any idea of the scale of the defeat, or what had happened at that time?
Well, we had a fair idea that our equipment was nothing like as good as the Germans, and certainly the speed with which they moved was incredible to us, and they certainly appear to be better trained than we were, and they had much more, or seemingly much more efficient equipment. They had better guns than we had because they were able to knock out our tanks, whereas our tanks with their guns were not able to knock out German tanks. So generally it was a fairly very depressing thing, because going backwards and not knowing very much of what was going on, but seemingly we were just pulling back and pulling back all the time without having any really major battles. We little realised how we were surrounded.
What was morale like?
Well, it certainly wasn't very good, because we were having to go backwards all the time. There was no going forward. To that extent, it wasn't so depressing.
Yeah. In England, you carried on as signal officer for a while on the south coast in the Weymouth area, and then exercises up in Dartmoor.
Exmoor.
Do you any stories that illustrate the sort of life you were leading then?
We were doing a lot of training and general exercises, and we were sent out onto Exmoor in, January, February time, when it was bitterly cold, and there was a lot of snow on the ground, and there were lots of accidents with trucks slipping all over the place, and we were living in the open, which was extremely cold, and there was a lot of snow and frost. And we had these were brigade exercises, and there were several people who were asphyxiated by going to sleep under trucks with the engines running to keep them warm, and we had some casualties in that way.
Do you think the casualties were justified by the training? Was it worth it?
Oh, I think it was, yes. It certainly had to, you had to learn the hard way. But of course it was very difficult to keep warm under those conditions.
What kind of a mess did the 8th run at that time for the officers?
Do you mean in the in the camps, or when we were out on training?
Just generally. Way, what sort of mess would you?
Oh, generally speaking, the mess was fairly good. We had a great character called Sergeant Cutty, who eventually became Sergeant Cutty, who ran the officers' mess, and his great friend Harry Runtree, who was the cook. And these two characters ran a very efficient mess, and they looked after us extraordinarily well. In fact, they were incredibly good when we were in battle. They could produce a meal out of nothing, even petrol tins and all the rest of it. Makeshift ways of cooking, they were experts, although neither of them had any idea of cooking or any training in it at all. But they were great improvisers. They were never beaten.
There was one story, I think, while at Honiton, about the officers' mess entrances. could just tell me that.
Yes, there was a battalion order which said other ranks would not use the officers' mess entrance. And one night, Sergeant Cutty and his buddy, Harry Rontree, were out and they'd been in the town and they came back. They slept in quarters in the officers' mess. And of course, they used to use this place. This was very much quicker than going in through the main gate, which was just further on. So they always used to use the officers' mess entrance. However, one night they were caught by the RSM. A great character called Spike Jennings, who was a man of. He only had one standard, and that was the highest, and nothing else would do. And he was loathed by most of the troops, because he was a great disciplinarian. And the next thing Cutty knew and Rontree knew, that they were up on a charge at the company office the next morning. And the charge was, to explain, Cutty was a lance corporal. I think he was an acting unpaid lance corporal. And the cook, Harry Rontree, was a private soldier. They'd been great buddies and they'd joined the tier together. They'd worked down the pit together before the war. And they joined the tier together many years before the war. And they were great friends, almost inseparable. And the charge read, the first charge was contravening battalion order number so-and-so, that they used the officers' mess entrance. And the second charge for Lance Corporal Cutty was consorting with a private soldier, which was rather an extraordinary charge, considering their past association. I can't remember. The CO was Ross McLaren at that time. Colonel Beard, I think, must have been on leave or on a course. And the acting CO was Major McLaren. He had great difficulty in keeping his face straight when this charge was read out. I think Lance Corporal Cutty was deprived of his lance rank as a temporary measure and reinstated fairly soon afterwards.
What did you think of Jennings, Spike Jennings, the RSM?
As I was adjutant in those days, he was a very reliable man who would get things done. You could rely upon him doing things. He was, from the adjutant's point of view, he was first-class RSM, but he was a very strict man.
Did you think he was over-strict?
Well, I suppose one could say that, but he had a great pride in the regiment, and he had great pride in the battalion. And if the battalion were to do a job, they had to do the job properly. It was a disgrace to him if they were not absolutely correctly turned out, or any little fault was a fault against himself. And to that extent, he tried to instill a tremendous pride in the regiment.
What was the role? You'd become adjutant, you'd left your signal.
Yes.
Platoon. What was your job as adjutant? What did that consist of?
An adjutant's job is mainly administrative. It was dealing with brigade and the general running of the battalion down to the companies.
So, after this period, generally Chet training and at Honiton and the rest of it, you went abroad in the Duchess of Richmond. Do you remember anything about that voyage?
The Duchess of Richmond was a CPR, Canadian Pacific Atlantic liner, which was on the Atlantic run, but wasn't equipped for the tropics. And it was extremely hot when we were in the tropics, and it took us, I think, 6 weeks to get out from Glasgow, Gorick, to Port Said.